following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wings up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, your official podcast for Georgia Southern Athletics. Colin Lacey alongside Danny Reed as we continue into the summer months of Georgia Southern Athletics. The news and notes will start to taper off. We'll get going here in a couple of weeks again with football cranking up and spring practice once we get into fall. But this week, we are going to debut something that we're going to be going with the next couple of weeks. I guess 17 weeks, I would assume. But every program...
We're going to run out of weeks.
We'll get there. Every program in Georgia Southern Athletics, we're going to do a summer check-in. It'll turn into a fall check-in, but we'll pivot that when we have to.
Pivot.
Yeah, there you go. But this week, we will start with Georgia Southern men's soccer, catching up with head coach John Murphy to get the summer check-in on men's soccer, making the transition from the Sun Belt soccer on the men's side that doesn't exist anymore,
right,
making the transition to the MAC, playing some MAC-tion football.
Is this the third time we've had him on? It's at least twice, because I'm trying to think if it's three, then he would take the title from Steve for most appearances on Inside Eagle Nation.
But is it most appearances on Inside Eagle Nation or most appearances would be on the bio? I think he still takes the cake, because we had him on for Beyond the Bio. We had him on for last year when we did the season preview.
Okay, then it would be three, because we've only had Steve for two.
Right. Well, we got to get Steve next.
Congratulations,
week.
Murph.
Attaway, Murph. But as always, Inside Eagle Nation is presented by our good friends at Arcola Septic. Arcola Septic is your premier septic services provider to Bullock, Bryan, and adjoining counties, and great family-owned business that's run by a pair of Georgia Southern alumni. Make sure to give them a call at 912-318-7939 or visit them online at arcolaseptic.com. For both commercial and residential customers, their more than 10 years of experience can help you out with pumping and servicing your septic system, drain field repairs, new system installation, and all of your septic needs. Remember to follow them on Facebook, Arcola Septic, yesterday's Meals on Wheels. Just a couple of things to get to around Georgia Southern Athletics. Georgia Southern Women's Tennis wraps up the 2021 campaign with the first regional ranking. We talked about them a couple of weeks ago after they won the Sun Belt Conference Championship up in Peachtree City. They went on to their first ever NCAA regional appearance up at Georgia Tech, but the Eagles finished the year ranked number 10 in the ITA's Southeast Region poll. So Sean McCaffrey and company definitely on the upward trajectory for Georgia Southern Women's Tennis.
That's not the last we're going to hear from them.
No. No, I wouldn't imagine so. One other news note coming out last week from Georgia Southern Baseball, as Nick Jones named to the 2021 Stopper of the Year finalist, one of 10 guys on the Stopper of the Year finalist brought out by the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association. He leads the country with 17 saves at the time when this came out, and I thought it was kind of fitting what he tweeted out after the – when he retweeted it, he said, just go ahead and give it to Kevin Copps. Somebody that over the regional and super regional threw over, I think, 345 pitches.
Yeah, he ended up starting their winner-take-all game against NC State yesterday. First time he had started all year. He had started before in his career, but he goes the whole way. He ends up giving up the game-winning home run. NC State wins the Fayetteville Super and goes to its first College World Series in 8 years, I think. But we mentioned with Nick this year, at least towards the end of the season, that we didn't think it was out of the question that he was a top 10 reliever in the country. Well, it turned out we were right. We just needed the stopper of the year to tell us that we were right, and we know that there's a couple more All-American teams that need to be announced. He's going to be up for those. Mason McWhorter is going to be up for those. But you know it by now for Nick, 17 saves, tied a Georgia Southern single-season school record. It was second most in Sun Belt Conference history. He was on the verge of number 18 that didn't get converted against the Cajuns, but at least Georgia Southern won that game to get to the championship against South Alabama. Bittersweet because you know his career here is over, but encouraging because in about a month we're going to find out if perchance he gets drafted and where his professional career may begin.
And next Wednesday, or rather this Wednesday, coming up tomorrow is when the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association All-American team will come out. We know that Nick Jones and Mason McWhorter, along with Jay Thompson, were on the ballot for the finalists for the All-American Award.
That'd be interesting to see if Jay got on there.
But he was on the ballot, but we will see what the All-American team actually looks like for the National Collegiate Baseball Writers Association coming out tomorrow afternoon. While we're talking about baseball, I know you've been putting out on social media the last couple of days some of the first win for Seth Schumann in his professional career, rather, what Joe Nahas has done, what Chase Cohen has done. Take a quick update on our Eagles in the pros. Got five different guys in professional baseball for Georgia Southern right now. Brian Eichhorn still dealing with the injury in the Cleveland Indians organization. But Sam Howard has been up with the Pittsburgh Pirates ever since opening day, made the opening day roster for the Pittsburgh Pirates. He is 2-2 with a 2.45 ERA this year. He's pitched in 32 games, 25 2/3 innings, and struck out 34 on the year. And being a Pirates fan, you get to see him more than most.
Number one, they needed a solid reliever. Number two, they needed a solid lefty option because within the last 3 or 4 years, just about every reliable lefty that they've had in the bullpen is no longer with the organization, whether it's been through trades or other means. But it's been really nice to see pictures of Sam on social media. His family's been up there quite a bit. We've talked about his mom, Bev, and dad, Tom. We talked about his brother in the Air Force and just how proud they are of him, how well he did here, eventually being a third-round pick after that great 2014 season. I thought he would be good this year. I mean, a year ago, you look at it, it's a 60-game sprint. What are you going to be able to do? It's an audition, but you kind of got to take those numbers with a grain of salt. How do you adapt those to a 162-game season? Well, so far, Sam's been really good.
I saw something that one of the analytics people put out in Major League Baseball that he has one of the highest swing and miss percentages
on his
in
slider.
Major League Baseball.
On his slider, yeah.
We've always known he's had a devilish slider, but that was pretty cool to see. He leads the major leagues in swing and miss percentage.
And if you think back to his career that took place not too far away from where we are sitting, the evolution of that slider is how he became a guy and then meant to the guy. That's him and Wirsu in that 14 season, just to go 1-2. I mean, we looked at what Leiter and Rocker have done with Vanderbilt. I'm not saying that Howard and Wirsu are those two, but if you want to put it in a Southern Conference frame of mind, that 1-2 that year was an enormous reason why the Eagles won 40 and won the conference title that year.
No doubt. It was really cool to see. You mentioned Beverly putting up pictures from their trips out to Pittsburgh to see him. It was really cool to see. She had a picture from outside the stadium, and they had one of those banner flags outside the stadium that you see, and it had Sam's picture and name and all that, and I know that that was something that was really cool to them.
I'm not so sure he thought he was going to be where at 54, but the fact that he's in the bigs, I'm sure he's okay with whatever number they give him.
You got three other minor league pitchers for Georgia Southern as Chase Cohen with the Midland Rockhounds, the AA affiliate of the Oakland Athletics, with a 1.93 ERA through 9 games, has transitioned into a starter's role. He's made 5 starts for the Rockhounds, 1-1 the record with 23 1/3 innings of work, 28 strikeouts, and we hear it from John Cohen a good bit, but getting to see some of the videos of him, getting to follow his career, he has really kind of taken that next step, is throwing 98, 99, 100 at times, and really has taken that next step in his progression.
The last year that he was here in 2018, he made that spot start in Mobile against South Alabama. It was game 2 of a doubleheader. That was after we had gone to Lambert's the day before and filled up on those enormous dinner rolls. He touched 98 that day at Eddie Stanky Field, and that's when scouts really started to take more notice. Now, earlier he had thrown 7 innings, 1-run ball against the Coastal team that won the league championship. Then he got into the tournament, had to start game 1 when Brian Eichhorn was injured. but he continues to find more miles per hour on that fastball. And we saw the video from spring training where he did touch 100. He has been upper 90s. He's working all of his off-speed pitches, and all the conversations we've had with pitching coach B.J. Green about how his fastball velocity when he was here, it would vary. It would go from 88 to 94. You might get a 96, and then he touches 98 during that final season. But now he has gotten to a point where 95 to 98 is a regular thing and not the outlier.
And he's been pretty consistent this year with the Rockhounds. Had a little bit of a rough outing to start, but ever since then, in his first appearance, he's been pretty lights out for that Double-A team. It'll be interesting to see if he gets bumped up to Triple-A, or you've seen it a lot the last couple of years, especially going from Double-A up to the big leagues, not to say that he's about to make that jump.
But with the Athletics, they do things a little bit differently. Yeah. They are extremely analytics-based. That's something that could happen, and for somebody that's given up one run over his last 20 and a third, I'm sure that the microscope is getting a little bit more focused on what Cohen's been doing in Double-A.
I do think it'd be cool if he went to Triple-A at least for a little bit, because that's out in Las Vegas for the Las Vegas Aviators, so him and Chris Draper could relink up.
We'll have to make him make sure he knows that.
Seth Schumann.
We could always go out there just to make sure he gets there okay. And
yeah.
Just make sure his bag gets there, make sure he knows where he's.
Yeah, sure he'll be fine. Seth Schumann with the Lansing Lugnuts, the high-A affiliate of the Oakland Athletics, has worked through a little bit of an injury bug, but it looks like he's gotten through that. 1-1 the record with a 1.42 ERA. 6 games, 4 starts under his belt, 19 innings of work, and 25 strikeouts with the whip under 1 at 0.84.
He's been used in quite a few different roles. From what it appears, Lansing's been going with a lot of openers, guys that are throwing maybe 1-2 innings, and then it's more extended from, because bullpenning has really become a thing the last 5 seasons or so. Now, he has started games, but his most recent outing, he went 4 innings, a one-hit ball up at West Michigan, and that was as the second guy out of the bullpen. So I'm not sure if they're going to keep him in that role, if he's going to continue to get starts, or how exactly he's going to be worked, but just like with Chase, the numbers for him have been really good.
Mentioned Brian Eichhorn still coming off the injury. He's on the 60-day injured list. Affiliated with the Lynchburg Hillcats, the low-A affiliate of the Cleveland Indians, but hopefully he gets back and right in the next couple of weeks. And then Joe Nahas with the Myrtle Beach Pelicans, low-A affiliate of the Chicago Cubs. He has been really good as of late. 2-1 the record with a 2.45 ERA, has made 8 appearances, did make 1 start. 22 innings of work and 33 strikeouts for Nahas.
And 2 days ago, he made his last relief appearance. 4 innings, 2 hits, career high 9 strikeouts against Augusta, which is now a Braves affiliate after being a longtime Giants affiliate.
Yeah, that's still very odd to me.
Yeah.
Every time we talk about minor league baseball and we're talking about these teams, we've heard a lot of these teams for years, but there were so many affiliates that either moved up in affiliation, down in affiliation, changed affiliation. It's, you're almost trying to figure out who is who it is.
There's been a major overhaul twice in about 5 years because there were a number of teams, especially in the AAA Pacific Coast League, that didn't necessarily drop, but they changed teams. So for a long time, you had teams that were affiliated with certain organizations and they just had to switch organizations. That was part of the reorganization to be more geographically friendly for travel purposes. And then coming into this season, now that Major League Baseball fully owns minor league baseball, you chop the season, you chop teams. We know we're going with 6 game weeks. Everybody gets every Monday off. There's no such thing as multiple teams, multiple places on a road trip, at least for this year. But the names of the leagues have changed, more affiliations have changed. So to piece all of that together when 5 years ago it looked remarkably different, it takes a pretty large map to figure out where the strings will go and where the paired clubs will actually go. But as long as we've got guys that are trying to make their way to the show, we'll be sure to keep you updated on those. But for the three that are healthy, they've been good stuff so far.
We mentioned it earlier, we're going to start a series of summer check-ins with the different programs around Georgia Southern Athletics. This week we start with Georgia Southern men's soccer. We will dive into what their camp schedule looks like on the flip side, but now we catch up with head coach John Murphy.
First summer check-in of the 2021 summer. We check in with Georgia Southern men's soccer and head coach John Murphy. Murph, appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thanks for coming by.
When you look at this offseason, it's been one that's been a little hectic for Georgia Southern men's soccer, having to make the transition to the MAC and the different conferences. What did that process look like from your side? We talked about it with Jared. We've talked about it with Chris. But from your side and in this program, what did that kind of look like?
Yeah, it's something that's been going on for a long time. And everything about our program when I first came in, I felt like the sky was the limit. But my concerns were the small number of men's soccer programs in the Sun Belt, and eventually it came to, you know, my fears came to fruition, which is you start to have programs drop off. You have Howard leave, App did away with men's soccer, and then all of a sudden you're starting to, you know, scramble a little bit. So I thought last year the Sun Belt members did very well, not only with COVID, but just trying to make do with a smaller conference footprint, playing each other twice a year. For other sports may work. For soccer, it's not great. And I thought we did very well under the circumstances as a conference. But obviously, once the season ended, Central Arkansas went to ASUN. Coastal Carolina went to Conference USA. And then you have two very strong programs in ourselves and Georgia State that were looking for a place to play. So there were some things that happened internally. It felt very well supported by Jared and Chris and our administration. I thought they worked very, very hard behind the scenes. And we are in the best region in the country for Division One men's soccer. So if we had to go as an independent, we could have done that for a couple of years, because we certainly have the opposition to be able to play. And I think our 2021 schedule will reiterate that again. But being part of a conference, it obviously gives you a focal point. It gives you an ability to play for championships, to get that automatic berth. And, you know, with successful teams, you get recognition within your conference, and then things build off of that in regards to all region, all American, and things of that nature. So operating as an independent is not ideal. We would have been able to do it if we had to. And the fact that we got into the MAC, I think it says a lot about Jared and our current administration. Very forward-thinking, and I think coming to the MAC, it's going to open up Georgia Southern's brand for men's soccer within a greater region. Obviously, we're going to be operating now up in the Midwest. Recruiting patterns have already changed. We've had a ton of contact from kids from up in that part of the world, and playing teams like West Virginia, Akron, certainly going to put us on a national stage within men's soccer, and I think it's been a great move. So it's a lot of work behind the scenes, but like I said, felt well supported throughout the process.
The MAC has kind of gotten a lot of publicity the last couple of years because of football. What does MAC men's soccer kind of look like?
Again, it might be strange for some people to hear about West Virginia being in the MAC for men's soccer. It's you know, an auxiliary member, and it's something that people don't associate with the MAC. But Akron's top five has been top five in the country for men's soccer probably the past 10 years. Produced quite a number of professional and national team players. Very, very strong. Bowling Green got the NCAA bid this year. Very strong program. But you have schools like Western Illinois and Western Michigan and Eastern Illinois, and people really, those names don't resonate with people. But from a soccer perspective, they're very, very strong and very good team. So then you add us and Georgia State to it. I think it's going to be a very, very competitive a very, very competitive conference. And again, we get to play for a automatic bid and hopefully go to the NCAA tournament for the first time in history. So there's a lot to play for. And I think the fact that we're in a greater geographical footprint is going to be great for our program. It's going to be great for Georgia Southern athletics and great for the university.
So we dive through what this program has kind of gone through the last couple of weeks and months. One of the big additions, a new addition to your staff.
Yeah, we've been fortunate to have a strong coaching staff during my time here, and we picked up Louis Vega, who played and coached at Florida Gulf Coast, was a former Guatemalan youth national team player. When he came to America, he was at Montverde Academy. And for people that know Montverde Academy from their basketball program, if there's a program that's stronger on campus, it's the men's soccer program. They produce numerous Division I athletes, players that go on and play professionally, players that go on and play for the national team. So, you know, the fact that Louis came from that kind of a background, youth national team player, played at Montverde, went to Florida Gulf Coast, was a standout player there, was an assistant coach there, and was highly recommended. So he brings a lot to the table. I think anytime you have coaching changes within your staff, it adds a little bit of life. Joe Molden is coming back from last year's staff. Joe was a top player at Butler and joined us last year as well. So it's a good young staff. As I'm getting older, I guess my assistants need to get younger. So it's great to have them with me, and they've already added a lot in just a short amount of time on campus.
I know a big part of what you try to do with this program isn't necessarily on the pitch, but being able to be a well-rounded student-athlete, and this program has really embodied that ever since you got here with not only the GPA, but this is a program that led the nation in community service for the 2020-21 academic year. What does that say about this program, and why is there so much of an emphasis that you put on that?
I think it says a lot about our kids. So, you know, you can create the platform, which I like to think that we do, and provide resources for the kids to excel. But, you know, for the kids to break the program record for GPA not once but twice within the same academic year, it really says a lot about them, especially during a difficult time with COVID. I have a ton of respect for my colleagues and every student athlete at Georgia Southern. Forget about other universities. Just focus on us for a minute. We had a great deal of support internally, but it was very, very difficult. And that's why I try and tell people, like football didn't have a good year. Football had a great year. They really did. It was very, very impressive what they did. Baseball didn't have a good year. They had a great year. And I could go all through our programs. The fact that women's tennis won the conference is really remarkable. It was a very, very difficult year. But getting back to the kids, they're the ones that put in the time academically. I think we set up the structure here, and the emphasis is on 3.0 or better every semester for all of these kids. And then the community work, you know, I'm a big believer in gratitude. I think gratitude's an important quality to embody. It shows maturity, it shows perspective. And I think when you're performing community work, it gives you a sense of gratitude, being grateful for your own family, being grateful for your friends, your teammates, the school that you represent. And then one further than that, like a lot of these initiatives were really driven by the players themselves. So Jack Philp, one of our captains, you know, drove a couple of these initiatives that added to our overall tally of community hours. So I was pleasantly surprised. I'm not sitting around keeping track of how many hours we're putting in community-wise, but I know what we can do. I know what we can do in this area. And now that we're getting out the other side of COVID, I think we're going to get back into doing the things that we like to do, getting out in the community, running some youth clinics, running camps, connecting with the local community, and just trying to inspire people through the sport of soccer. And it's the same thing with a lot of places that I've worked. I mean, they're not looking at you as a Georgia Southern men's soccer player. They're looking at you as Georgia Southern athlete or a Georgia Southern coach, and that carries a lot of weight in this area. And I do feel like we're part of a greater team within the athletic department and university.
You touched on it a little bit earlier, how the recruiting landscape has kind of changed ever since Georgia Southern moved up to the MAC. But when you look at being able to be back out on the road, it's just come out the last couple of weeks that you've been able to get back to kind of normal recruiting. How good does that feel to be able to get out, and what kind of student athlete are you looking to bring to Georgia Southern?
Again, I do believe the school has a national profile, so you are going to get interest from out of state and internationally, but our bread and butter is Georgia, and that's really where we need to put our focus. And my staff's done a fantastic job since we've been released from the dead period of really hitting locally and within the state, in-state talent. So it's very, very important for us. You know, I have a lot of IRC memorabilia in my office on purpose, because it's to remind me and everybody on my staff that, you know, the best kind of people that do well at Georgia Southern are blue-collar people, the people that work hard, the people that don't have their hands out looking for something. They're trying to make the best of everything that they have. And I feel like these kids are very well supported. The resources that we have here, not only within the program but within the department and university, are exceptional. And I've been in a couple Power Fives, and what we have here is as good or better than those places. But you do need a blue-collar individual that's going to be a worker and a grinder. Obviously, in any sport, you need quality. In our sport, you need technique. You need to be able to use the ball well. But definitely the type of kid we're looking for is a hard worker, someone who obviously is balanced. They have to be able to handle the student-athlete expectation. They have to be able to handle the community service expectation. And I really do believe that you can do all of those things well. I think you can be a good student. I think you can be a good person within the community. And I think you can have an exceptional soccer team. I think we can do all three things. We've done all three of those things throughout my time here, and we just need to be more consistent in doing all three at the same time over multiple seasons, which I feel confident we'll do moving forward.
One of the big parts of any athletic program in the college landscape, in the summer, you get to do a lot of camps. And so you guys got a couple of camps coming up, just finished up one, but on July 16th, you've got the 5th annual Goalkeeper Summer Summit. You've got the Attacker Summer Summit. What do those two camps really mean to this program, and what is it like to be out in the community and be able to put those on?
Yeah, I appreciate the free advertising. That was great. We use our camps. I think for the high school age kids, we're obviously using those to recruit and to try and bring people to campus. But I do think we have an obligation as a member of staff here at the university. I take great pride in the camps that we've run over the years, and we've had kids from, I think, 15 different states come and come to our camp. So now you have people coming from different parts of the country, and they're staying on our campus, they're staying in the dorms, they're eating the food in the cafeteria, and you know, everybody comes away just blown away by our university. So I do feel, as an employee of the university, that we do have to do these types of events, and what it does, it opens up our campus to people that may have never seen it before. So with the high school kids, we try and hit more of a national and a regional footprint. We're trying to get talent on campus to recruit them. But we also have a little kiddie camp from the 19th of July to the 23rd, and that's for boys and girls in third grade to sixth grade, and we do that with Chris Adams and his staff, and it's a lot of fun. We play soccer in the morning, and then we get them in the pool and cool them off and play some silly games in the afternoon, and then give everybody a popsicle at the end of the day. So, I mean, for me, it sounds like a pretty good day. So, I think it's important to get into the local community to really impact Bullock County in a positive way. And again, the camps are another way of doing that. We're very lucky in our sport. It's really a unique sport. It's played all over the world. It doesn't mean it's the best sport. I think it is. But the reason why it's the most popular sport in the world, a very, very simple sport, and anybody can play it. I think that's the nice thing about getting out in the community. You can teach a kid to touch a ball, and even though he or she maybe was brought up with football or basketball, you know, they find that they can play it, and they at least can get out there and run around and have a little bit of fun. So that's really where we are with the young kids. And then obviously as we start getting into older kids, those camps are used as recruiting opportunities. So there's a lot of talent in this area, and I think it's getting better and better, and we're fortunate with the growth of Tormenta that soccer is going to continue to grow in this area, and we feel that we're a big part of that as well.
Finally, before we let you go, what does the summer kind of look like for Georgia Southern men's soccer? I know B-term coming up here in the next little bit, but what does the next couple of weeks and months look like as you get closer to the season?
It's a lot of planning. So, when you walked in, we were basically just planning out the season's schedule. And I have a lot of respect for football. I've really tried to follow football over the years and read quite a bit of books. And I like how they map everything out ahead of time and they map out the training sessions. And I'm a big believer in that. I think you should be able to know exactly what you're doing on October 14th in preparation for the Mercer game on October 16th. And you don't have every single detail of that event, but you certainly know what the intensity and the duration of the session is going to be and possibly what the content's going to be based on the way Mercer plays and the things that we'd have to look at in those games. So I've got that from football. Football likes to map out their work. I've been close with some football coaches over the years, and Chad's a fantastic guy to talk to as well. I like picking his brain about how they do things. So we're doing a lot of that type of planning, a lot of travel planning. I'm a big believer in the hotels and the restaurants and providing, you know, really quality student-athlete experiences for these guys, because, I mean, you go up to UNC to play Chapel Hill, you know, you can't just go up there and stay at some shack on the side of the road. I think there has to be some detail work in regards to the meals, the travel, the timing, making sure we're not missing classes, making sure we're balancing out all these different things. So there's a lot of work to do during this time in the summer. It's definitely not a time where you're sitting back. It's actually a time where you need to do some work, because the kids are are going to be on campus first week of August, and it just starts really moving from there. So the time that we spend between now and then is quite valuable to us, and doing a lot of prep work, a lot of scouting, and as you said, still recruiting, preparations. We already got our 2021 class coming in, and we have to start preparing for 2022 and 2023.
Murph, appreciate the time. Appreciate everything you do for Georgia Southern Athletics.
Thanks for coming by. The
following is... Once again, that is John Murphy in the first summer check-in of the season. Always great to catch up with Murph.
Getting ready for some action.
Oh, man. There's Murph takes on Maction. That's fantastic.
There's one thing that we need to iterate about him. Look, Murph's been here for a couple of years, and I know that some of us have had a chance to see some games. They had a difficult season. We're really lucky to have him lead the men's soccer program here.
Oh, no doubt.
I'm really fortunate to have him here.
There's a story that I think Chad Jackson did on GSEagles.com. You'll have to dig a little bit for it on the men's soccer side, but just go to the news tab and look at Murph's coaching career and his coaching tree. It's pretty impressive. Yeah. He's coached at some of the highest levels in professional soccer, and it is absolutely amazing what he has done here in Statesboro. And he did it relatively quickly. I mean, you think about it, it feels like Murph's been here forever. But he's only been here 4 years. And so being able to transform the program and making it into, and we talk about this a lot, I know, and you're probably tired of hearing about it, but making it into a program and not just a team. He created the entire Gatta FC. It's the soccer side of it that encompasses both men's and women's soccer, but making it more of a team and making it a program of what Georgia Southern soccer is all about.
We missed an opportunity today. Wear the Gatta scarves, the Gatta FC scarves.
Oh, mine's hanging up in my office.
Terry's probably wearing three of them right now, so we could have just borrowed a couple, and that would have been cool. But he's a phenomenal dude. We brought it up before about how he's had some broadcasting experience with NBC Sports Network. He spent time at Clemson. We know he spent some time up in the Northeast. It's with the Revolution, and he's it.
At some point, I want to do a soccer game with Murph. That's on my bucket list. There are two people that I want to call a game with. One is I want to call a basketball game with Bill Walton. Just because I think that'd be the most fun I've ever had in my life.
And two is with Murph.
Two is with Murph. Bill Walton and Murph.
Okay, it would have to be either a Georgia Southern women's soccer game or it would have to be a non-men's game. Unless he would have gotten thrown out, which I don't think he would be up for that.
Yeah, I don't think. I don't want to call a game with Murph after he gets red carded.
He could do a MAC tournament game if Georgia Southern's not playing in a game.
Ooh,
I don't know if the MAC would want Georgia Southern to host the men's soccer tournament, if that was part of the bargaining agreement, or if they would go neutral site. I'm not quite sure how the MAC would operate in that respect.
But, yes, Murph is one of the top coaches of anybody in the country.
It's really good stuff.
They've got camps coming up. Camp's a big part of what athletics all across the college athletics landscape looks like. They just finished a camp up. They will have the 5th annual Goalkeeper Summer Summit on July the 16th, and they will start the Attackers Summer Summit that on July the 16th as well. July 17th through 18th, you've got the Elite Development Camp and the Pre-Academy Development Camp as well. And then, as he mentioned, July 19th through the 23rd, the Eagles Co-Ed Soccer Day Camp, where you play soccer in the morning, as he talked about, you go to the pool in the afternoon, and then you get a popsicle. I'm pretty fired up about.
Pitch, pool, popsicle.
There it is.
You mentioned about camps, though. We're overlooking J.I. Clement Stadium. We've had baseball camps taking place this week for the Eagle baseball program. Within the next 2 weeks, men's basketball, they're having the Brian Bird camp over at Hanterfield. That's taking place starting on June the 28th through July the 1st. So that's how you occupy a lot of the time during the summer months. More important in some instances because some sports have still not gone out to recruit yet, even though the moratorium was lifted on June the 1st. Some sports have not gone back out onto the road yet. You're trying to generate funds. You're trying to generate exposure. Those camps serve a lot of different purposes in those summer months until we get back to the fall with the start of soccer, the start of volleyball, the start of football, and all the fall sports.
And you've seen camps really take off, and a lot of it is the volunteer assistant has to take it on. Seth Lancaster, a big part of what Georgia Southern does. And watching him out there with – it was a kids' camp earlier today. Yeah. You had the prospect camp yesterday, which is one of my favorites to watch. But watching Seth Lancaster, I think he had more fun than some of the campers.
Well, it's nice because as a player, he was on the left of the infield. This year, he was the first base coach, and now he gets a chance to do some catching. So he's making his way around the field.
He's doing it all. But Georgia Southern baseball will have more camps coming up. The 22nd of June will be the second prospect camp. You've got a third prospect camp on the 29th of June, and then the 5th through the 8th, Georgia Southern baseball will have the second youth camp, and we will get you up to date on all of Georgia Southern athletics camps. You mentioned Georgia Southern men's basketball has camps coming up as the Brian Berg basketball camps. That's just a great name. You've got ages 4 to 6 on the 28th through the 1st. You also have ages 7 through 18 on the 28th through the 1st.
Yeah, Shoemate's going to have fun with that 4 to 6 camp.
Yeah, I can only imagine. It's a shame that you don't get to see a lot of the camps that go on, because just walking past, whether it be the gym or here at JI, it's a shame that more people don't get to watch that, because it's a lot of fun to watch.
You get to see the coaches in a different element. They're not in full uniform, or in the case of basketball, they're not in their suits or in their polos in a game setting. You get to see them really teach the game to guys and girls that maybe get a chance to come to Georgia Southern, that are on the fence about, oh, basketball's fun. Do I want to get better at it? Do I want to take this seriously? Or if you're really young, how can I drive my parents crazier for the next few days? you could take care of a lot of different things, but to see those guys relate to a different audience than, you know, talking to a public or with their own team that they recruited, it is fun.
Georgia Southern softball will also have some camps coming up on the 16th tomorrow. An Eagle Skills Camp coming up over at Eagle Field.
Tomorrow.
It is. The Pitching and Catching Camp on the 22nd. Eagle Skills Camp on June 23rd. July the 6th, another Pitching and Catching Clinic. And then the Eagle Skills Camp as well on July the 7th for Georgia Southern softball. And you hear it a lot of times, and you hear it a lot with coaches that take over a program and say, I came to this camp as a kid, and now being able to bring it full circle. There's so many stories like that of somebody went to a camp and end up either playing or coaching for that team.
Brian Berg's instance, where he went to a University of Texas camp when Chris Beard was an assistant coach at that point, sends all those letters when Beard ends up at Texas Tech, sends 4 weeks' worth of letters. Beard finally calls him and says, dude, you got to stop with the letters. Coach Knight's off, you got to stop sending all these letters. But it created an opportunity where he could go to Garden City, work for Coach Marceau, and continue to build his own resume, build his own legacy. And over the course of 17 years, he now has his first Division I job, and we'll see how year two goes when the fall and winter gets here.
The last team to update you on the camps, Georgia Southern Volleyball, just finishing up or in the middle of a youth camp actually right now. It's the 14th through the 17th, but the Attacking and Setting Clinic for Georgia Southern Volleyball will be July 7th. July 8th will be Ball Control and Defense Clinic. College ID Camp will be July 9th through the 11th. A team camp will take place here in Statesboro July 16th through the 18th for Georgia Southern Volleyball. Youth camp July 20th through the 23rd. And then a high school tune-up July 26th through the 27th for Georgia Southern Volleyball. So that is all the camps all around campus. Football has camps going on throughout the year as well. A lot of camps. A lot of activities going on.
If you want to look at it a certain way, we've got roughly 6 weeks until Sunbelt Football Media Day down in New Orleans. Football camp, fall camp isn't going to start too much after that, and then that's an all-day, everyday deal until September the 4th when Gardner Webb comes to town for the first time since 2002. And last year was about how everybody was going to deal with COVID. That's all we heard about. It got annoying, and it got to be too much in some instances. Now it's how do you move on from COVID? Because as we've said a couple of times on these podcasts, there's no such thing as moving games this year. If you have to miss a game because of testing protocols, you forfeit that game. And there's been athletic departments, teams, organizations stressing the vaccination all across the country. Some are up to speed, some lagging behind a little bit. They want to continue to test. They want to be responsible and safe that way. But I think that this season could generate just as many stories and just as much interest as the unheard of last season did. But that'll be something that we'll keep an eye on once we get to August and September.
To get more information on those camps, you go to gseagles.com, go to the individual sports page, whichever sport you're trying to get a camp for, and there will be a tab up there at the top for the camps for that different sport. This week's You Pick, you conjured up this one.
This is from Daryl Lynch. She thought of this, I think, right after last week's podcast, so I'm happy that I remembered it.
There you go. Do you have to write it down?
No, I got it. No, we're good. Outside of the team that you cover or root for,
okay,
what is the best rivalry in the Sun Belt? And for us, that's an interesting question because I think we can agree that Georgia Southern App is the best football rivalry. We can agree that Georgia Southern, Georgia State is the best basketball rivalry.
Yeah.
There's not an argument for those two in this league. But you take Georgia Southern out.
Okay.
What is the other best rivalry? You can talk about other sports, keep it just football. Maybe if you think about another rival from another conference, but
so it can be somebody from the Sun Belt with a rivalry with somebody from a different conference.
If you think it's best, yeah.
Okay. Do you have one in mind?
I've got one. I've got a couple.
Okay.
All right. For football, I'd have to say Arkansas State and the Raging Cajuns.
Hang on. Are we breaking down sport by sport, or are we doing overall all sports?
Whatever way you want to take it. Whatever comes to your mind. But if we're talking specifically football, I think it's Arkansas State and Louisiana.
Yeah,
because there have been a lot of off-field, on-field instances where those two cannot stand each other. It always seems to be knockdown, drag out. Cajuns have been really good the last couple of years. Arkansas State's trying to come back into the forefront out in the West Division now with Butch Jones as head coach. We know he has Andy Kwan on staff as the tight ends coach. We'll get a chance to catch up with them about midway through the season. If we're talking just Sun Belt baseball, the easy one is the Raging Cajuns in South Alabama, because that goes back about 30 years whenever John Lieber hit Papo Ramos at Tigmore Field and
the huge
brawl ensued, and ever since they have really not liked each other. They would have met in the championship if it wasn't for Georgia Southern knocking out the Cajuns in 11 innings.
That would have been a heck of a championship game.
And it turned out that it could have been for Georgia Southern, but it just got away. And it could have gotten away from South, could have gotten away from Louisiana, you just never know. And if Arlington holds on and beats South, I think Georgia Southern and the Mavericks would have been awesome. I think the Cajuns and the Mavericks would have been awesome.
Yep.
The point that we saw is that the best four teams had a chance to play for it, and that's what you want in a tournament setting.
No doubt. Is that?
I thought a little bit about Troy and South Alabama.
Yeah.
Because in football, it's the battle for the belt, and for basketball, it seems that both arenas get packed. Whether you're at the Mitchell Center in Mobile, Trojan Arena in Troy, baseball, South dominated this year. They swept that three-game series. Two of those were by shutout. The one that I want to say, but they like each other so much, is Texas State and Arlington.
Yeah.
There's no bad blood between those two.
The thing that kind of made me laugh, Val, is going through the geographical rivals, quote-unquote, was the Louisiana one. Louisiana and ULM, because we've talked about it a lot, how ULM sees it as a rivalry and can't stand Louisiana.
Yes.
But Louisiana's like, okay, they're ULM. They're up there.
That's not us.
No, that's kind of, yeah, that's kind of known.
I would say Coastal and the Cajuns in baseball.
Yeah.
I think that's become one, especially after that series in 17. And Conway was a 1-1-1 series.
Yeah.
That final game got tied because of a curfew. Then the Cajuns had their travel issues. I think they had to bus back because they couldn't get their flight. Their flight had gotten canceled out of Charleston. That's when they had beaten LSU in the midweek, the Wally Pontiff Classic that year, 4 years ago.
That's also becoming a little bit of one for the entire athletic department between Louisiana and Coastal because of the COVID outbreak.
And they don't play each other in football this year or baseball this year.
As long as we play Louisiana baseball, that's all I care about.
We talked about this in the tournament. This is one that we can reveal to you, that Georgia Southern will be traveling to Tigmore Field to take on the Cajuns for baseball in 2022. And it's likely that we're going to go back to a 30-game conference schedule next year.
Fantastic.
So none of this 24-game stuff.
Fantastic. Mine, that I kind of went a different route. I went a team in the Sun Belt with somebody outside of the Sun Belt. The one that – there's two that really popped in my mind off the bat. Coastal Carolina and Liberty.
That's a good one. That's a really good one.
They cannot stand it. And I didn't realize this until Georgia Southern played Liberty in the Cure Bowl.
Oh, yes.
And we had so many people from Coastal texting us, and they were huge Georgia Southern fans that day. I never knew that that was so much of a rival as it was, but you ask Joe Cashin, goodness gracious, there is no Chanticleer in Flames love.
And especially after Liberty ended their chances at a perfect season last year in the Cure Bowl in overtime, I'm sure that adds a little bit of animosity to that.
The other one, and this is based a lot on our conversation with Brant Freeman.
Yeah.
But Texas State and UTSA.
Yeah.
Those two really don't like each other. And a part of it is they're only separated by 2 hours-ish.
Oh, I don't think it's maybe 45 minutes, yeah.
And so I think it's kind of the geographic, but it seems like every time Texas State and UTSA get together in anything, it's pretty heated.
They've been fortunate to play a couple of times in football. I don't think that they – if they did last year, it was one of the games where Texas State led late and the kicking game let them down, but there's been a couple of close ones. They haven't beaten them at the Alamo Dome in a number of years. I think basketball has been relatively close. I think that's been a home-and-home where 1 year in San Antonio, another year in San Marcos. Don't bring up UTSA around Brant, because you're going to take him from a good mood to a bad mood really quickly.
No, he was pretty excited whenever the first day of the conference tournament for baseball over in Montgomery, he had to miss the first couple of innings of the Texas State game against App State because he was calling Rocket League for Texas State UTSA, and he was fired up that they won.
One more that I could think of, and I'm not so sure how much of a rivalry this actually is, but we saw it from the other side after the New Orleans Bowl, the Cajuns and Louisiana Tech. I don't know how much of a rivalry that actually is.
Isn't there a lot of not necessarily rivalry, but animosity between Louisiana Tech and ULM?
Yes, as well, because they were supposed to play this year. That was a game that got scheduled. It wasn't a part of the schedule, but it got rescheduled. But then issues happened. ULM had COVID concerns, so that game ultimately got bagged.
It just seems like nobody in Louisiana likes Louisiana Tech.
And nobody in the Sun Belt really does either.
Well, that's for other reasons.
And they've never been in the league as a football member, but they were as a basketball affiliate during the 80s and 90s.
That was a good question. Good you pick.
Got to find a way to fill time.
I like it. I'm a big fan.
Thank you, hon.
That'll wrap up this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation, episode 134. I can't believe we've gotten through 134 of these.
Yeah, next week, 130. So by the time we get to football, we're going to be close to 150.
Knocking on the door.
We're going to be in the neighborhood of 150.
That's math that my head won't do, but you're the numbers guy, not me.
When it shows up on the screen, oh, hey, it's 149. All right, 150's next week.
But that'll wrap up this week's edition of Inside Eagle Nation. Next week, we will have our summer check-in with Georgia Southern women's soccer and new head coach Chris Adams, one of my favorite people to talk to.
He's going
to
be good stuff.
Yeah, we're gonna knock out the two. I don't know who the best coach to talk to. Well, we've got a lot of new coaches.
Yeah.
So they can be knocking on the door of who the best one to talk to is. Going to be a lot of fun.
Could be something you could ask them.
That's true. That's going to be the last question. Who's your favorite coach to talk to?
Find out from Chris Adams next week.
We will. Well, we'll check in with women's soccer next week with Chris Adams. But until then, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.